We have so much to get to today. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Nigel Burton of the Pac-12 Network. At 4:30, Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle to talk Seahawks. We'll hear from coaches Cristobal and Avalos, who had a little Zooming to do with the press today, the NFL, the Blazers, you name it. We are wired in. And we are not messing around. It's a somewhat abbreviated week. And to open the show, a leadoff hitter, if you will. I know I'm supposed to find another description for this week's game, but nonetheless, it's Oregon and Oregon State. Beavs with one in the win column over Cal. Our guest is the triple threat, voice of Beaver Hoops, baseball, football since 1999 on Twitter. Use the handle at MEPOSU. We open up and welcome in our friend Mike Parker. Mike, how are you and yours doing during this, oh, zany year of 2020?
Steve, we're doing okay. It's an honor to be the leadoff hitter. I don't think I'm probably not going to go Ricky Henderson and knock one out of the ballpark, but it's an honor to be part of the leadoff to what's always a special week, even in an amazing year like this, crazy year. When you look at it, Steve, that we're all doing well, by the way. Thank you for asking. I hope you and yours are doing the same. But, you know, I think, am I right? Only three schools, the two Oregon schools and USC, of the 12, have been unaffected in some
amazing
way, shape, or form, right?
It's amazing how they've been able to sidestep. Unique, to say the least, Mike.
It is. And so I know it's early in the week, but let's just, you know, I hope and believe we can get to Friday at 4:30. That's a moving part as well. We go from 4 to 4:30 now. I mean, I never know. Every hour, it seems, something new is coming down the pike.
Yeah, I believe the phrase is head on a swivel.
right.
Mike, everybody I spoke with, whether it was Mike Yam, Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network, were really high on the Beavs coming into this season, showing improvement. You know, they had the tight loss to the Cougs, frustrating to Washington, and Saturday, my goodness, just back and forth. So maybe oversimplifying, but how big was it to just get one in the W column, just to have a little extra spring in the step this important week?
Very important, clearly, you know, for a lot of reasons, to have a little momentum going into this huge rivalry game on Friday at 4:30. I don't know if you have a leader in the clubhouse for a new name. They chose not to name it, which I think is wise, actually, to give this odd year, let it stand alone without a name. We'll see what happens in 2021. But it was important on a lot of levels, and I also think, Steve, to win it the way the Beavers did, to get the go-ahead touchdown with about 4.5 or so to go, set up by a great special teams play, Josiah Irish blocking a punt the second straight week. The Beavers have done that. The second straight week they've had the Pac-12 special teams player of the week, and Jamar Jefferson with his 196 makes him the offensive player of the week. But to do all of that and then to hold off Cal at the end with a big play, Akili Arnold tipping a ball a million miles into the air, and then when John McCartan was the one guy when it seemed like everybody could have gotten under it, called for it, and made the catch. McCartan hauled it in, and the Beavers had themselves a much-needed win for the psyche more than anything else, because the other two losses were pretty painful. They feel much better going into practice this week.
Talking with the voice of the Beavs, Mike Parker, it seems certain programs or pro franchises just have a knack for a position, whether it's Penn State linebacker, you, lineman at Wisconsin. Well, I don't have to tell you, from Kenny Simonton, Steven Jackson, Quiz Rogers, OSU always have a top flight back. You've seen them all. How high up the list are we going to end up putting Jamar Jefferson?
Jamar, a lot depends on whether he ends up playing, whether he chooses to come back next year. And the fact that he's played so well means he's in the conversation, like Jaquiz and Steven Jackson were, of leaving early. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does. And what's disappointing about that is this is a shortened season. And last year was a somewhat shortened season for Jamar due to injury. So in terms of where he fits on the all-time charts, he may not end up as high as some of the other guys you mentioned. But I put him somewhat in the Steven Jackson category, not quite as dominant per se as Jackson could be with the combination of speed and power, but he does have both. And we saw for the first time in his career Steve, on a couple of runs against Cal, an element of speed that we haven't really seen. He's done most of his work on inside zone stuff where he's reading, cutting, breaking tackles, a lot of yards after contact. But we saw in that opening play the speed that he says he's gone to work on. That was the knock on him coming out of as a guy under-recruited, a perfect kind of Oregon State guy to find through the years, because some of the other backs that you mentioned, the only one that had high credentials really coming in, huge ones anyway, Steven Jackson. Everybody else was sort of an under-the-radar type of guy, and Jonathan Smith and his staff, to their credit, found another one in Jamar. But part of the reason he was under-recruited out of Narbonne High School in L.A. was his speed. People were concerned about his speed, so what he did was join the track team his senior year to work on it, just to go through drills and to find ways to get faster. He's still not an absolute DeAnthony Thomas-type speed burner that way, but he's faster than he was, and we saw his breakaway speed against Cal. Nobody caught him
on a couple of
different runs, 75 and 65. So he's fast enough, and he's strong. He plays big at 5'10", 217. So we have two backs similar in nature, I think, coming up in the Friday game.
Yeah, I believe the defensive backs of the Bears right now could attest to his expanded speed for sure.
Right.
Obviously, Jake Luton played well as an OSU quarterback. I mean, he wound up starting in the NFL. But in speaking with multiple analysts who follow your program, they were really excited to see what Tristan Jebbia could do in this Brian Lindgren, Jonathan Smith offense. I know he had the two picks, but he's been a starter for all of four games. How are you liking Tristan so far as the trigger man here?
You know, it's interesting, Steve. I don't think we haven't seen the best of him yet. Certainly not at Washington at 11 of 24 and 85 yards. And even last week, while he took a step forward, I still think there's much more in his game. And that could be what you allude to. I mean, for the credentials that he had getting recruited in Nebraska, a very highly rated pro-style quarterback, it has been a long time, even with as much of a gym rat and as studious as he is. Nothing really beats game experience and the speed of the game stuff. And you're right, his starting sample size is small. I thought he showed last year in the Civil War down the road a dimension that we haven't seen yet this year, and that's the ability on occasion if something breaks down to make plays with his legs. I think that's in him. Maybe not Tyler Shuck-esque, but it's in him to make plays with his legs. We haven't seen that yet. I think he'd take a little pressure off himself if he just feels comfortable enough, rather than force a ball into coverage, as he's done a couple of times, to take off. Go get a few yards and slide and live to play another down. I don't know whether that's going to be part of the plan against Oregon or not, but I'd like it to be, because I do think he'll be better than he has been. Whether he can do that against an Oregon defense that's highly regarded, took a few hits against UCLA just in terms of numbers, but they're good. So he's got his biggest challenge yet against a very good defense. But I expect him to get better and better, as quarterbacks tend to do in the Riley Smith era. They get better as they go, and I think Tristan's best days are ahead of him.
Well, first I have to note, 3:08 after Game 3, Mike Parker becomes the first one to say, Tyler Shuck-esque.
Hasn't he done enough, though, already? What he can do after when a play breaks down or even on some design runs. And, in fact, I thought the most impressive play offensively for Oregon might have been the touchdown pass to Dye down the middle, which was set up by the threat that he is to run the ball, because it looked like a design quarterback draw type play out of shotgun. He runs 3 yards toward the line of scrimmage, stops suddenly, and pops the pass to Dye running down the seam, and it's 14-0 just like that. And it looked like a blowout might be underway. UCLA had something to say about it, but that to me is what I'm talking about, Steve, that Shuck's ability to do that has to be honored. And his ability to make plays with his legs has been impressive in what I've seen so far.
Oh, yeah. And again, like Tristan, just getting started. Obviously, nothing works without the line. They took a bit of a hit. They lost the left side, plus Clay Cordasco, the right guard. They have a new left tackle. Brandon Kipper back on the right side. Jim Mihalchek, I would say, is easily one of the best line coaches around. I mean, guy spent years in the NFL. So what's the word, Mike, about how this group is coming together?
I think pretty well, Stephen. What I thought they answered that question in the second half in particular in the Husky game the week before. Washington, as we saw, I mean, they dismantled Arizona. That final score is not indicative of,
right.
of the beatdown they put on Arizona. And that was only their second game. And now, you know, they're scrambling to try to find one in this weird world we're in. And BYU, by the way, should say yes and go play that, I think. But anyway, that's a whole other issue. But Washington is good. They're physical. They're good. They're not maybe quite CFP good like they were in 16, but they're really good. And I thought the Beavers, with that new offensive line you allude to in the second half, were moving some people and creating. Now, it was the first game for Washington. I get that. But I thought the Beavers physically and even athletically made some plays in the run game that encouraged me that the new left side that you're talking about, I thought that was a big step for them in that game to move. And I wouldn't say push around, but hold their own and create enough creases for B.J. Baylor and Jamar Jefferson to have success in the running game. And, you know, so I think the offensive line has come together well under, as you say, one of the best in Jim Mahalchik.
A few final thoughts for the voice of the Beavs, Mike Parker. I want to get to the secondary. Obviously, in this league, you better be prepared to defend the pass. And they return a bunch of experience. Grant Wright, Isaiah Dunn. I think I think you mentioned the redshirt, Akili Dunn, who was pretty highly touted coming out of Mission Viejo. And by the numbers, I think they're the fourth best pass defense in the conference. What's the word on how Blue Adams guys are coming around?
Well, Blue does a great job. The players really like him. Sometimes early, as you know, numbers, part of the reason that the Beavers are, let's just face this up front, that they're fourth in pass defense. Teams have been able to run the ball okay. That's an area.
All right,
so,
you said
know, if you can, Washington did that. I mean, Dylan Morris and the Huskies really didn't challenge the Beavers much at all in the pass game. Jaden DeLora and the Cougs did. But, and Cal did too, with Chase Garber's making some big hits. The Beavers have got to clean things up on the back end. What they do have, though, they've got some physical talent and some length in the secondary that they haven't had for a while. Nashawn Wright at 6'4" is a guy. He had another interception against Garber's. He has four career. His brother, Rajon, at 6'2", provides some length. So they're getting a little more length and athleticism in the back end. And they've got a guy, you mentioned Akili Arnold, I did earlier, who is starting to be a real playmaker, a forced fumble, 15 total tackles already. But Alex Austin, another redshirt freshman at a Long Beach Poly, is a physical corner. He's a guy that's holding his own. He still has work to do in coverage. But guys, after the catch, he's one of the guys that gets you down. He made a couple of plays against Cal on third down plays, where a pass in space on a little shallow cross or a slant, the Cal receiver would catch it, and down he'd go one-on-one against Alex Austin. So Austin and Arnold are guys to look at, and you mentioned the experience of Jaden Grant and Isaiah Dunn. They still have work to do back there, but they're getting better.
Of course, at outside linebacker, I respectfully refer to Mr. Rashid, who returned for a final season. I thought that wasn't a lock. Had that huge heads-up hustle play, blocking a punt. So overall, while his stats this year are not jumping off the page, how impactful is it having, you know, an All-American caliber player in that linebacking core?
He'll get better, too. And last year, His emergence onto the scene developed a little more slowly. Now, there's not a lot of time to develop this year. We understand that. And he's more of a known entity going in, so teams are paying more attention to him. Plus, he missed about 10 days in fall camp with a lingering injury that's healed. It's still not quite 100%, but better. And I think we saw some signs against Cal where he had his first tackle for loss. He had some other pressures where he looked a little bit like the old Hamaker Rashid Jr. So the discipline that those edge rushers are going to have against Shuck will be, I think, an important factor. UCLA got home four times. I was a little surprised at that. I didn't expect that from the Bruins. I don't know if the Beavers can get home that many times. They had 32 sacks last year, which was their most in a season since, you know, way back in 2008, I believe. So, you know, I think Tim Tibisaar is doing a great job with the overall defense. But so far, they've only had three sacks, and one of them was on kind of a broken play from a safety. So they need to find Hamaka, get back to the in a powerful edge rush game he had a year ago where he set Oregon State records in sacks and tackles for loss. And it looked like against Cal he was starting to get healthy and come back into form.
And lastly, we know Oregon's out to a 3-0 start. They haven't been overwhelming, but they have a lot of new faces in really important places. So even though it's kind of early in the week, obviously you've been paying attention. What's the buzz? What are your observations about the challenges these Ducks will present Oregon State this week?
Clearly huge, as always. I'm not quite sure what to make of this last game, though, Steve. I'm sure your listeners and callers will have plenty of time to kick that around today and the rest of the weeks before the days before we go into the rivalry game. I haven't seen every play of the game we were on at the same time. Obviously, DVR'd it and have gone back and looked. And just to see the fact that UCLA ran for 264, that Oregon only ran for 88, I don't know what to make of that, because after the big rushing games, the first two games, I don't know if this is UCLA so much better or what the issues were this past Saturday. But they're so talented, even with some of the attrition, with the opt-outs and the injury. By the way, has there been any kind of update for Oregon with regard to Noah Sewell? I knew that Mario said maybe it wasn't as bad as originally thought. Is there anything new on that that you know of, Steve?
Yeah. I was listening to Coach Cristobal on his Zoom meeting, and Sewell practiced today. I don't know if you saw the injury, but I would have bet my 401k that there's no way he would have been on the practice field today, but he was. I'm almost thinking that's a miracle.
No, that's unbelievable to me based on the body language of everybody after it happened. It had one of those hush, you know, not that there were anybody in the stands, but had there been, you know, 54,000 would have been quiet. You know what I mean? It was that type of feeling. And so you're saying, you broke up a little on me. Full practice today?
He was on the practice field today. Like I said, I just had time to listen in on Coach, and I was like, I had to do a double take.
Yeah, well, I hope that's the case. I mean, as much as that makes it harder for Oregon State, we all want these guys, everything these players for all programs around the country and you know what they've been through. I mean, God bless them all to be able to get back on the field and play as much as they can. So I hope that news continues to be encouraging for Noah. I guess what I'm saying is I'm a little surprised that UCLA did what they did against Oregon on both sides of the ball. So I don't know if the Beavers can. UCLA still always has very good athletes. They look the part on the field physically, and maybe Chip's got him, got him going again. I don't know, but I was surprised at the difficulty in that game for Oregon to win. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think first of all, easily the best Bruin team Chip has run out there. I think he's got his guys. I think the foundation has been put down. And I actually was talking earlier. I said, as the year goes on, I think the caliber of this Oregon win will rise a little bit, if that makes sense.
Right. It does. And just as I think the Beavers loss, even though it wasn't a win, you take an ugly win over a good-looking loss anytime. But I think the Beavers' performance at Seattle in only, you know, losing that thing by six and, spot gate, proper spot away from maybe having a chance to score and take the lead in the fourth, that loss for the Beavs might end up looking better before it's all said and done, because I think Washington's very good, too.
All right, folks, he is Mike Parker, voice of the Beavers. On Twitter, use the handle MEPOSU. Always appreciate the time to chat, Mike. Have a great broadcast, and of course to you and yours, wishing you health, happiness, and this year, 2020, I'm throwing in sanity.
Not too many days left in it, Steve. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I listen to you a lot, as I've told you many times before, driving around and listening and hearing some of the good old stuff that you talk about. With, you know, you and I are of the generation of late. I don't know about you, but the losses of legends in the world of sport of late are just, there's one after the other, and it doesn't seem to stop. 2020's been a hard one for a lot of reasons, but I know that when you hear some of the names that have gone here in 2020, I think of you sometimes, because I know you grew up with Tom Seaver and with Joe Morgan, so many of these guys, it's almost impossible to keep track of. And I know you've been feeling along with the rest of us, just how sad that all is.
No, and I know I could speak for you. You just, a piece of your childhood goes when these guys, when these guys pass. No question about it.
Exactly. No doubt. Hey, thanks for the time, Steve. Great to talk to you.
Always. Have a good one, Mike.
Thank you.